Welcome back to the BizNews Rugby Show with our BizNews Insider, our BizNews Rugby Insider, rather, Rory Steyn. And today, this week, we are also joined by Tim Cocker from Egg Chasers Rugby, who will be giving his insights into the Big Six Nations fixtures this weekend. So stay tuned for that at the end of this episode. But before we get into this weekend's rugby, last weekend had some pretty big upsets and some really close games in the United Rugby Championship. Rory, what are your thoughts on last week's fixtures?
Thank you, Patrick, and a very warm welcome to you, Tim. I gave you very little notice, and I did so only because I watched the Egg Chasers episodes on the Six Nations, and you speak with so much passion that I thought, no, man. And you kindly offered last time you were on to come on to BizNews Rugby, so I gave you very little notice. You agreed. Here you are. Thank you for joining us once again. And as Patrick has said, we look forward to those Six Nations previews toward the end. But in keeping with the introduction, looking back on the URC fixtures in that little interlude in the Guinness Six Nations, I've already written about that. So I'm keen to get your interview, your views on that, Tim. So what struck me was the really competitive nature of this tournament. I mean, we all know that it's grown beautifully and it is now a wonderful tournament to watch with great rugby played. But that log is congested, you know, with the possible the only exception is the Dragons way down at the bottom. But even Zebre, the 15th team on the log, they've even got a legitimate chance of making that playoff. That's how tight it is. And we saw the one that shocked me, Tim, and I'll just introduce this and then I'd appreciate your views. The one that shocked me was Edinburgh crossing over and going and getting a result in Munster. I did not see that coming. And good on Edinburgh. They played well. They had to, of course, to beat Munster at home. And then you had Cardiff, which is the best of the four Welsh teams, as we know, coached by their, the current interim coach of Wales. Sam Sherritt, but they went across to Leinster and they were 12-0 up before you could take your seat. And then, as I said in the article, normal transmission resumed and, Leinster were comfortable 42-24 winners. But, you know, the local derbies were great. I called the fact that, the Lions would build on their success against the Stormers and they would beat but never did I see them going 38-0 up before Sia Kulisi and I think it was Ethan Hooker saved the shutout there and scored two tries in the last 4 minutes when the Lions had well taken their foot off the accelerator. But those derbies are proving good. And, you know, the Lions get to... So we have a derby coming up this week and that would get everybody in the URC onto 12 matches played. So that's the last of the two teams that are on 11 matches played, the Sharks and the Lions. And we can talk a little bit about that. But how did you see the URC last week, Tim?
Well, firstly, how's it, Brew? Anytime at all, it's my pleasure to be on and any opportunity to chat about rugby, as you know. And you're absolutely right in what you say. I'll only correct you on one thing about the URC. The one team cast adrift at the bottom, but also you have to say Leinster on their own at the top. They're untouchable. They're 12 from 12, unbeaten the whole season. And it's looking a tough job for anybody to stop them at this point. But this is the interesting part of this time of the season and could have contributed to some of the less predictable results we've seen is that it's happening during a Six Nations. So there are a lot of players that are outside of that squad. But that is nonetheless why you've already pointed out the Edinburgh win in Munster was surprising because actually Munster don't have that many full Ireland internationals. And Leinster, whilst it was a bit of a scare for them against Cardiff, without a team's worth of internationals, still with guys like RG Snaiman and Geordie Barrett and a load of incredible youngsters, they're still able to put Cardiff away. But you're right, it's building to a really, really fascinating business end of the season. And yeah, someone's going to emerge. You thought at this point, and this time last year, the table was starting to take shape and there was definite separation. But it's, like you say, it's turning into a big blob, which is making it all the more exciting.
And on the notes of the URC, looking ahead to the only game this weekend, the Sharks versus Lions rematch 1 week after the Lions had a pretty convincing win at home. Now they're traveling to the Kings Park Fortress, you could say. Do you think the Sharks will just be too strong
Yeah, you know, and I'm not sure, gentlemen, why those two teams were announced so late. I mean, this interview was set up for 11 o'clock and the Lions only announced their team at 11 o'clock. So we've got that now. And they, unfortunately, have got some pretty crucial injuries. So there's no Kuan Horn at 15 and Henko Fenta as well. You know, they're going to miss those guys. But the Sharks have picked a Sharkbok lineup. So they've got Sia starting at as captain. They've got Mbonambi, Vincent Koch. They've got all their big guns in there. The only one missing is Lukanyo Am. But they've got a very, very settled back line nevertheless. I mean, if they've got to move Ethan Hooker onto the wing, then you know that they've got firepower there. So I cannot, I don't know what you think, Tim, but I can't see the Lions traveling to Durban and winning this one. The, you know, as I said, the last of the local derbies and the last match in the league to get everybody onto 12 teams. So I'm going with the Sharks, and the Lions are of course going to put up a fight. I love the way they play. They're a joy to watch. They play for each other. They, the cliche has now become, they are so much more than the sum of the individual talent there. They are a real team who play for one another. And I think the Sharks have missed that, to be frank. You may have made that comment on one of your videos, Tim, that, you know, it's difficult when you've got all those Springboks there. How do you build team unity in a squad where the Springboks are in and out? The Lions don't have that problem, and they are truly a team. So go and prove me wrong, Lions, but I'm seeing the Sharks taking this one by 10 to 14 points in Durban. Tim, what do you think?
It does feel like with the Lions, what I find really interesting, Rory, is the psychologically, a lot of those Lions players sort of feel like they might have a little chip on their shoulder legitimately, like we're the forgotten, we're the runt of the litter, and we're you know, all the other teams are circling to pick off which are the good Lions players they're going to pluck, as happened with Jordan Hendrickson. And that might add a little bit of steel to the Lions that they want to go there and prove a point. But yeah, going back to your original point about just how tight the log is, a home knockout game is absolutely massive, and the Sharks can give themselves a little buffer over Munster and Cardiff and Edinburgh, the teams chasing them down, to try and keep that top four spot. So yeah, I can't see past the Sharks. I think they were a bit off it last week, that they'll bring their A game this week.
Good man.
Before we move on to the Six Nations, a little bit of a score prediction. Sharks by how many points do you guys think?
I think there'll be quite a lot of points. I would say, yeah, Sharks by two scores, but I could see this being a kind of 40-25, something like that. Lots of tries.
Happy with that, Patrick. Yeah.
Sharks by 15, we'll pin it in. And moving into the Six Nations, the first game, probably the most exciting of the weekend, the top of the table clash, unbeaten Ireland playing at home against France, two strong teams. Who's your pick there, Tim?
Just on this game and this occasion, I am so excited. Like, I am an Englishman and a very proud Englishman, but I am more excited about this match than about any other game in the Six Nations. And even before the top competition started, even when the fixtures were announced last year, everyone circled this one in the calendar. It is absolutely box office stuff. And you only have to look at the games that the teams have played in recent years. That game in Dublin, the last time they played there 2 years ago, was at the time, I described it as the best half of rugby I'd ever watched. That first half, the intensity, the fact that the ball in play time was off the charts, and you had incredible players on both teams. And that effort was only surpassed in the World Cup by the quarterfinal weekend, where France and Ireland were both on the losing side of things. So these two teams, the matchup is amazing, and it's going to be fascinating to see what France have learnt from the pain that they've inflicted. I do think they've got deep-rooted scars from that Dublin defeat 2 years ago, and obviously, as you'll be aware, from the quarter-final defeat. And this team have underachieved for the talent that they have. They've only got one championship in 6 years, and this is a title decider. If France win it, they will more than likely go on and win the championship. If Ireland win it, they will more than likely go on and get a very rare Grand Slam. So this is kind of all or nothing for both of these teams, which just adds to the magnitude of it. For what it's worth, and my overall thought, I think in Dublin, Ireland will just have too much. Even with France having the Rassie split on the bench going 7-1.
Crazy.
I still think, what's the reaction to that in South Africa? People must have taken note of that, surely, and been talking about that.
You know what, Tim, and I want you to finish what you're saying, but in South Africa, the overall reaction is everybody's chuckling into their sleeve because they're all saying, look at this now. Rusty came up with that stuff. Williams over there in Australia was having a full go at us, as we know. And now everybody, well, not everybody, but now France, one of the greatest teams in the world, is copying us. So it's more a bit of a laugh than anybody looking at it calculatingly from a rugby perspective. And as you said, there's huge risk in that because if something happens to Ramos, that fullback, and they've got to move or even to... what's his name? Intermac at flyoff, and you've got to put Ramos there. You have to rejuggle that thing. You could land up with DuPont at 10. You could land up with DuPont at 12. You could land up with Mauvaka at 12. You know, it's a real risk, even more so, I think, than for South Africa, because at least we've got Kwagga Smith, who plays sevens. You know, he excelled at sevens. He can, yeah.
Yeah, South Africa did the 7-1 by having a lot of guys on the bench, Dion Free, multi-position, and a smaller guy. France have gone with the 7-1, but just gone massive.
Yeah.
It's gone beasts all the way through, which, like you say, I think it's a risk that might not be worth taking. But I think the reason they're taking that risk is directly because of what happened 2 years ago when they were gassed at halftime. And Ireland, with the way that they play, they're so fit and that they can play long phases of play. They don't kick the ball out, and neither do France. And France, with these big guys, were just absolutely out on their feet. So having practically two packs. I mean, I just wonder how long it's going to be before someone does an 8-0 bench.
Exactly. So, you know, Tim, if you look at France's last performance, and clearly, they were wounded. They were hammered by the French media when they went and lost to England. And then they came out against Italy and scored 11 tries. And you pointed out that that was not a Mickey Mouse Italian team. Italy are a proper international outfit. And France just absolutely went and decimated them. And it was because they had this Le Bomb squad, you coined the term, you know, bringing those big boys off. I mean, they've got Emmanuel Mouyafu on the bench. So when they bring him and the rest of those heavyweights off the bench, Ireland could find themselves with their hands full. Now, two comments there. Were this game in Paris, I would definitely back France. And a lot of me actually says, I think France can do this. This, you know, the head says, Ireland at the Aviva Stadium in Dublin, playing for a Grand Slam, playing for a third in a row Six Nations title, are going to be very hard to beat. And as you said, you know, their ruck speed, the way they turn over, the way they take the ball wide, those rolling waves of rugby are very, very hard to defend. And those players were exhausted. BizNews Tribe, do yourself a favor. Please go and watch Tim's Egg Chasers video where he looks back at the 2023 fixture. And just have a look at those French forwards. When DuPont pulls off that insane piece of defensive work on Mac Hansen, how he has the strength in that little body to pull a man back going forward with momentum at pace off the goal line and bundle him backwards into touch is something that I don't think we'll ever see the like of again, to quote a line from O'Flower of Scotland. But go and have a look at that. But my point was, Tim, that as you said, this fixture, as well as before the injury to Sione Tuipulotu and some of the other Scottish players, a lot of Scotland fans were circling next, the final Scotland fixture when France play Scotland. Because if Scotland hadn't had those injuries and the setbacks, and if you know, the calls hadn't gone against them, arguably, against England, like they did last year against France, then that would have also possibly been a title decider. But this week, you know, it's all about Ireland versus France at the Aviva Stadium on Saturday. What a game it's going to be. So please continue with what you're saying. I interrupted you, and I just love the passion with which you speak about this as an England supporter. And then, of course, we can talk about that that game, England-Italy, as well as the Celtic derby.
Well, I mean, I'll put it this way. If us in the North had to send a team south or to the equator to play against a best of the south, pretty much all of the players would be drawn from this one match. which, and you look at, there are some positions on the park where you have got arguably best against best in the world. Jameson Gibson-Park against Antoine Dupont. Piatto Malvaca against Dan Sheehan. I know in South Africa you love Malcolm Marks and he'd be in the conversation as well, but you got a lot of arguably the best players in the world in their position going head to head.
Low versus Penno.
Versus Penno. Yeah. Incredible. Absolutely fascinating. What's going to be really interesting to see is this, we're going to find out a lot about this young man, Sam Prendergast, and he looks to be the heir to Johnny Sexton's throne. He's bringing the spiral bomb kick back into fashion, and he looks very cool, calm and collected. But is that going to be the case when you've got 150 kilo Emmanuel Mayafu running at you? We're going to learn a lot about these two teams. I think the atmosphere is going to be wild. I think it will be a game of pure intensity, and I think the players are going to be out on their feet at full time again. All 46 of them. And I do just think Ireland are going to do it. It seems in the stars with the Peter Omani, Kian Healy, Conor Murray having their farewell match in the green in Dublin. It just feels like, it just feels like it's written. But with the players that you've already mentioned for France, Ramos, Dupont, Penno, anything is possible. It's going to be amazing. But I'll just go Ireland by one score.
Yeah, I mean, absolute box office in the title decider this weekend. And then game number two, Scotland versus Wales, the Celtic derby. Scotland coming off that Kolkata Cup loss. And Tim, I'd love to hear your thoughts on that. But Scotland versus Wales, a struggling Wales side, Scotland at home. Is this a easy one to predict?
It's a banana skin.
I mean, I'm going to be a bit indulgent here, Rory, and get some inside information. When's Kyle back?
Do you know, Tim, he sent a video recently. He's in Bath right now. He's staying with Finn Russell. He sees a sprint coach down there that helps him with his speed. And so he's down there getting this sorted out. So there was a chance that he would be ready this weekend for Wales. No chance. I think there's an outside chance he could play against France next weekend. But the club, certainly Glasgow Warriors, are targeting his return against Munster, which is a big game. So that's where we are. It was a PCL grade 2 tear, so that needs a bit of time. But he's nearly there, and I can tell you, he's like a blooming racehorse in the gate. You know, his a leash at the throat is an understatement. So he's nearly ready. Thanks for asking, Tim.
No, I bet. Well, I mean, Darcy Graham is back, and so Scotland have a almost full strength back line, and that is what they need to flex. They did against England, but somehow we managed to emerge from that with a win. But I think banana skin's exactly the right way to put it. And the transformation in Wales in only three sessions under Matt Sherrett was amazing. What more has he been able to do in 2 weeks? Or conversely, will the surprise factor that the Wales sprung on Ireland not be the case with Scotland, because they now know exactly what's going to be coming at them? It's good. I think for what it's worth, that Wales, if they carry on playing the way they did against Ireland, which was just, let's have a go, let's be brave, I think that plays into Scotland's hands a little bit. I think that's what Scotland would quite like, because that will present opportunities. There'll be turnover ball. It'll be open. I think it's going to be another cracking game to watch. And I think Wales will probably look at this like a free hit again. Again, whilst the expectations may have been heightened a little bit after their performance against Ireland, they're away from home, they're against Scotland with all those stars. So I think Wales will just throw caution to the wind again, and they look really dangerous, especially guys like Tommy Rafael, Jack Morgan and Talupe Faletau could be very, very influential. And I think if Wales do win, it will be because they can stem the tide at the breakdown of Wales. How do you see it going? You've got skin in the game in this one.
Yeah, and how good was Talupe Faletau last week? You know, the old man coming back. Is he a three-time British and Irish Lion?
Yeah.
He was just extraordinary. Yeah.
Unreal. 34 years of age and
right,
coming back into form, and you would not bet against him being on a fourth British and Irish Lions tour, which, bearing in mind, it's, as a lot of people feel very, very grateful if they get the opportunity to do it once.
Yes. So
four times is mind-boggling.
Has anybody played on four Lions tours?
I was just, as I was saying it, as the words were coming out of my mouth, trying to wrap my brain. I think it must have been done at some point, but
back in the day, yeah, before they went to 4-year tours. But you know that just to this Celtic derby and the banana skin, I think it's going to be, it just depends what Wales decide. And sorry, Matt Sherritt, I think I may have called you Sam earlier, and I was thinking of the actor Sam Shepherd, because I'm just back from the Oscars. And I saw a photograph on the wall in my hotel of Sam Shepherd, and I think I've got a little bit of brain fade there. But what is Matt Sherritt going to do, Tim? Is he going to go to Wales' strength and play the waiting game and kick and give nothing away? Because in that case, it's going to become Wales's kicking game versus Scotland's attacking flair. If Wales throw caution to the wind and it's back line versus back line, then I think the preponderance of winning probability shifts to Scotland, because Scotland's back line is sheer poison. So, you know, it's all, let's see what game plan he brings. But if I may just say, going back to last weekend in the Calcutta Cup, like I said in the WhatsApp message I sent you after the game, Tim, England's defense was outstanding and their breakdown work was brilliant, but Scotland simply didn't take their opportunities. And you cannot blame Finn Russell. The game was not lost on the last kick, despite the idiotic refereeing decision. I mean, how poor was that? You know, you've got to use your incursions into the opponent's 22. And, you know, you have to take your hats off to England. Their attack is woeful, as you've pointed out, but their defense was outstanding. And it was simply that. So, you know, I have to, as a Scotland supporter, as passionately as you are an England one, I just have to say, well done, England. You know, you got the job done by the Twindaloo and Ben Earl at the breakdown, and by defending like absolute Trojans. So they've obviously fixed their defensive problems that they had when Felix Jones exited. But as you say, what a game it's going to be, only overshadowed by this enormous fixture in Dublin. I cannot wait. It's mouthwatering.
Yeah, and I forget who said it, but there's a very prominent Scotland voice said, losing this weekend against Wales is unthinkable for Scotland, because it would mean coming into a tournament, a potential dark horse to win the whole thing. And a loss to Wales means they are staring right down the barrel at a fifth place, possibly. And, you know, trying to save some face. So this is massive for Scotland. And like I say, that psychology, I think, to your point about Wales, I think Matt Sherritt seems to have breathed fresh air into this squad and will just say, go and be brave, go and have fun, which I think will make for a great game. I think it will also make for a Scotland win.
Yeah, yeah.
A lot riding on that game as well. And then you did mention England, and they're playing Italy this weekend in the final Six Nations fixture at Twickenham. England coming off that Calcutta Cup win, Italy thrashed by France, and England too strong here for Italy?
Should be. We should be. But I mean, the big talking point going into this one is Marcus Smith, who started the competition as England's fly half, having been England's best player in November, moved to fullback against two of the toughest fixtures in the tournament, against France and Scotland, and then onto the bench now against Italy. And that's just fascinating in itself. I'd love to get inside the mind of Marcus Smith and see what he thinks. I can understand it from Steve Borthwick's perspective, I guess, for all his incredible talent. And I do think Marcus Smith has got a massive future in that England jersey, maybe the England number 10 jersey. And I think a lot of countries would give the right arm to have a player of his caliber in their number 10 jersey. I haven't seen him yet take a game by the scruff of the neck and control it in the way that Andre Pollard does. And the best fly halves, when you think of the tens that have won World Cups, or in the Six Nations context, one Grand Slams, Johnny Wilkinson's, Johnny Sexton. These are guys who just own the game. And for all of the talent, I haven't seen enough of that from Marcus Smith. Now, that could just be because England's attack is confused and he's having to kind of make something happen out of nothing. I think that's probably what's going on. So I think actually that's still got a lot to play, the Finn Smith, Marcus Smith battle. But Finn Smith and four other Northampton Saints teammates are in England's back line, and I think that might be what he's thinking. Let's lean on the club combination, which we've seen Ireland do, we've seen France do, Scotland as well. So I think there is there is merit in the call whilst it's getting a lot of people talking here in England.
You know, Tim, it's I feel for the guy because he's been brilliant at in the Premiership. No question, he bosses the game. He takes the ball to the line. He's mercurial. He breaks the line. And he's been outstanding in the 10 shirt. And there's almost no right answer here because I get what Steve Borthwick, well, we think he's thinking, is he's playing Finn Smith with his club teammate. Now you're saying, I wasn't aware that he'd brought in a whole bunch more Northern Saints guys to play outside Mitchell and Finn Smith. But poor old Marcus, now he's all of a sudden on the bench. And we had a player back in the day, Tim, that you may or may not have heard of called Brent Russell. He was small, but he was nippy and fast, and he had footballing skills coming out of every pore. And those were the days when we considered small players surplus to requirements. It was before the days of Cheslin Kolbe and the ability of Russie to see value in a player like that. And, you know, we now have a couple of those little Power Rangers with their scrum caps on who are just unbelievable. But, you know, where to hear from Marcus Smith? I mean, he's brilliant. So where is he going to fit in? Is he going to become now that guy that comes off the bench and brings it in the last quarter? Is that, you know, sufficient of a role for a man of that ability? Or will he get that 10 shirt back once there's no longer a need as England rebuild their attack to play club mates at 9 and 10? So I'm going to watch this with a lot of interest because, as I say, I feel for Marcus Smith.
Oh, 100%. And we're just to draw a parallel, if everyone was fit and firing and playing well for their club team and there was a World Cup final next weekend, who's in the 10 jersey for South Africa? Would you go Sasha, Marnie, Hondre?
Pollard, every day of the week.
Same. Every day of the week and twice on Sundays. 100% the same for me. And so you could probably draw a parallel between Sasha and Marcus Smith in just their ability to the box of tricks that they've got is the tools in their armory way more than anyone else. But those fundamentals are what wins you championships, what wins you big games. And maybe Finn Smith has demonstrated a little bit more of that, bringing other people into the game more. But hey, it's a 23-man game these days, isn't it? South Africa know that as much as anyone. And so it's not to be sniffed at the role, that this very important role he could play in a number 23 jersey.
And Tim, how good was Finn Smith's defence against Scotland? I mean, I think that kid made 16 tackles and he was tackling the likes of Richie and Jack Dempsey coming off the back row of set pieces. He was unreal. I didn't know he had that in him, and he's young.
Yeah, and when you think back to the best England team that there's been, oppositions knew that they weren't going to get an easy run through the 10 channel with Johnny Wilkinson. He would knock everything back. And it is important. It's a little chink in the armour which teams can expose. And France will be looking to do that against Ireland. But teams aren't going to come up against England with Finn Smith at 10 and target that because he's a tough kid.
So, Tim, final question. Are you going to be at Twickenham on Saturday, tomorrow?
Not this one. I've been at the last two games at Twickenham and I love it. It's amazing, obviously, as you know, but nothing like live rugby, but it feels like living in a washing machine, down to London, traveling all the time. So I'm just going to, because I just want to sit and absorb the rugby this weekend. So I'm going to be doing it from my sofa, different feeling, but it means I'll be able to get even more videos out even faster. So
do you know what, Tim? I think that's the right call because that's what I'm going to be doing. I mean, you're going straight from Dublin to Edinburgh, to Murrayfield. And the best way to see those games, you know, despite the chias, as we call it, that you miss at live rugby, is being on your sofa to watch these two extraordinary clashes. So, Tim, again, a massive thank you, mate, for doing this. I know you love talking about rugby, but you have your own channel and yet you're prepared to share your time with ours. I'm very grateful for that. And I really hope to see you in La Rochelle towards the end of next month. So all the best for this weekend and may it be everything we expect it to be as men who love rugby. Thank you and thank you, Patrick.
It's a weekend of absolute must-watch rugby, particularly that Ireland-France game, which I think everyone should be tuning in for. There was the Business Rugby Show joined by Rory Steyn, as always, with Tim Cocker, and I'm Patrick Kidd from Business.com.